Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I've read a thrilling book. I don't allow a book on the show unless it thrills me. But it's hard to find some that are really thrilling. This book, Aphasia, by my guest Mauro Javier Cardenas, is a thrilling book. It's his second book to be published in America. The first has the hilarious title, The Revolutionaries Try Again. And in this book, one of the revolutionaries is in America, on the West Coast. Some of this book takes place in Los Angeles. Aphasia is published by the wonderful people at Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and it's a pleasure to see a book as interesting and experimental as Aphasia being published today. Now, tell me, would you mind, Mauro, this book has a design. Could you describe it?
The first impulse of the book that I wrote about, it was the one where Antonio is alone in his office at Prudential Investments, and he is trying to write about his childhood while he's trying to avoid calls from the bail bondsman that wants his money because his sister has gone missing and has broken the bond contract. And that, I didn't write that section with any intention, with any sort of larger narrative in mind. And that was the first seed. And then that impulse in that sentence led to the next sentence, and then the next sentence. And once I had enough of these, I was able to kind of put them in front of me and say, okay, what is happening in this novel? And then the design comes.
Well, it's interesting because within a chapter, we discover what I at least think becomes the design of this book. Antonio has gone to a website whose initials are YSA, Your Sugar Arrangements. This is a website of people who are striving not to have relations with the people they have sex with. They just want the sex and not the responsibility. And many of the people on this website use a second name. Antonio, who we'll be reading about, he's the major character here, uses the name Arturo. But all the other people he's in contact with are using false names as well and giving false explanations about their gifts. But throughout this book, we're going to witness characters who are only partly what they say they are. Everyone is a soon-to-be ex-wife, or a soon-to-be new girlfriend, or a soon-to-be ex-lover. It's a whole cast of characters doubling themselves because life experience today is conducive to doubling. This is not a literary device. This is an accurate description of what we are discovering about identity as we invent ourselves online and elsewhere.
Part of it is that Antonio and many of the characters experience erasures throughout their lives. And these erasures can be the knowledge that relationships, their adult relationships won't last, the memories that they've forgotten. And so there's a lot of this doubling and tripling and trying to exist among some of these erasures. And on top of that, you know, Antonio has a very, I don't want to say cynical perspective towards adult relationships, but he knows that many of these adult relationships won't last. And so he tries to avoid committing to any of those relationships because he believes that doing so will cause a rupture in his daughter's lives. And he says, I think there's a passage where he talks about how, you know, since adult relationships end anyway, why make the children unhappy by introducing a new person into their lives? And so he has to, therefore, multiply his personas in order to keep them separate.
Now, you were born in Ecuador, and you moved to America, among other places. You are well-traveled, but eventually you moved to the San Francisco area to study economics at Stanford.
I was an economics major. I was focused on public policy. I was, you know, really, you know, similarly to the character in my first novel, trying to prepare myself to go back to Ecuador and run for office. And so I was really kind of completely separate from anything to do with creative writing. But it was at Stanford that I first had the first thought of maybe this is not the right major for me. And that's where also I encountered Borges for the first time, which was one of the major sort of seeds of me wanting to explore the possibility of becoming a writer.
Well, Mauro, I think if only you had looked down the hall or across the campus, you'd have encountered a writing department that contained Gilbert Sorrentino, and I think you would have been thrilled because he was very influenced by Flann O'Brien and the themes of doubling and tripling and quadrupling were crucial to his books. Sorrentino also published poetry, and you seem to me to be, as a novelist, a poet novelist.
The way I think about it is that there's a certain number of novelistic conventions that no longer work for me. The conflict action resolution narratives, the reversals and recognitions, all that kind of sort of conventional narrative that we see in advertising and TV and everywhere no longer really has anything to do whatsoever with my experience of the world or my desire to represent the world. And so it was this sort of, when I was writing my first novel, The Revolutionaries Try Again, by the end of it, I felt that I encountered this kind of long sentence, what I call performance of an impulse sentence, that although it doesn't use conventional scenery and it doesn't use conventional sort of narrative, it had a certain kind of energy, right? That impulse at the beginning that would make the sentence compelling and that would allow everything to flow through. So not only the memories, but the imaginary dialogue, the references to other books, all of it was sort of my way to say, well, this seemed to me the kind of sentence that I could use going forward. So I immediately started writing the second one with that same impulse, that same sentence that was my way of representing how my characters were experiencing the world.
I'm talking to Mauro Javier Cárdenas about his marvelous second novel called Aphasia. And I would say that the number of quotations that creep into these characters' minds. I'm thinking in particular of Theodore Rethke's poem, I Knew a Woman Lovely in Her Bones, that somehow or other poetry is crucial to the growing sense of maturity of these characters. They are, bless them, trying to escape the realistic world and enter the world, well, let's say aphasically, where things happen that can't quite be put into words, much the way poetry happens, where we read a poem don't quite understand it, but its words mean something to us.
I think that's right. And I think that there's also another dimension to Antonio's relationship to poetry, which is poetry, in that particular instance, in that poem, reminds him of someone, someone who told him a story that has an influence on the way he thinks about adult relationships. That story of one of his coworkers talking about his parents and how they used to recite poetry to one another, including that poem, and how he would listen to them in the living room reciting poetry to one another, and how that becomes Antonio's sort of narrative of how adult relationships should be, right? That sort of intimate connection between two people.
You know, life is full of surprises and privileges, and the screenwriter of Five Easy Pieces, whose real name was Carol Eastman. Carol Eastman and I used to meet together on Sundays to have breakfast and to read poems to one another. It was really quite an amazing thing, because one of the poets I introduced to her, she introduced to Jack Nicholson, who was a lifelong friend. And so at her funeral, Jack Nicholson read a poem by James Tate. Poetry is not alienated from ordinary life. Poetry inflames and incites us to greater insight into our everyday life.
Absolutely. I remember when I was in my early 20s and I had a job in downtown San Francisco, and I lived in Hayes Valley, and I had a skateboard, so I would skateboard to the train station. And it was at that time that I wanted to start writing, and I had no idea what that meant. I hadn't taken any courses. I didn't know anything about fiction other than reading Borges and Cortázar. And so I thought that the natural thing to do was to memorize poems, just so that I could understand and feel in my bones the musicality of the English language. And so I would go down to the train station in my skateboard reciting poems to myself in order to try to memorize them.
In this book, there's a range of writing that I recognize and love. You have a sentence or two from William H. Gass's novel, first novel, Omen Setter's Luck. I almost dropped the book on the floor. And on page 160, I, Michael Silverblatt, am mentioned as someone you would like to have as a father. I was amazed, shocked, flattered, bewildered. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that particular passage comes from my own life. There was a time where I was going through a difficult period in my life, and I would listen to you do the interviews. And I remember listening to the Ulipian interview, and I remember listening to the interviews with David Foster Wallace. And all that flows into that one passage. Because in the book, as you know, Antonio spends a lot of time with his headphones on, listening to his mother, recordings of his mother, recordings of his former wives. So that intimacy of the voice, you know, inside your head, right? It's almost like a physical intimacy of having somebody's voice and you listening to it. I think I wanted to capture that moment and that sort of level of intimacy in that narration of Antonio listening to you interviewing the Ulipians and David Foster Wallace.
He transcribes his mother, he transcribes me, he transcribes his grandmother. Transcription is tradition in this book, and it's what gives the character the extraordinary range of voices that become available to him. When you read a book like Aphasia, you're learning how to read it. You're being instructed. And I often did not know where I was in time or space, and I was thrilled to be suspended and relocated, put in a different relationship to temporality, to factuality, to character. I felt you were discovering in this book the way any writer of originality has to discover, the way Joyce discovered the hours of Ulysses, that you have to let the reader re-encounter the possibilities of life as altered by reading.
I think temporality is one aspect that oftentimes makes sentences a bit clunky, because you have to go from one time period to another and make transitions. And I felt that those were unnecessary. There was so much in aphasia that I took out from the novel, right? And I think temporality was one where I felt that it was okay as a reader to be in one time period, switch to another without much sort of notice, and then, you know, switch to a reference and switch to a memory, then switch to imaginary dialogue. And as long as that was all centered around the impulse of the sentence, that it was okay. That it was okay to not exactly know where you were, as long as you felt that connection to that energy that the sentence was trying to convey.
Well, flowing into this novel were the works of Sebald, in particular The Rings of Saturn, I felt, the work of Thomas Bernhardt, whom I love, and the work of Laszlo Krasznahorkai. All three of these writers, like Mauro Javier Cárdenas in this book, write in long sentences that maneuver between places, between times, between characters, until we're meeting not a story, but the situation of a world that pre-exists and post-exists the story. You can get glimpses of the story, but you're meant to experience the wide, strange world that's been doubled on the web.
I think one of the key novels that are central to aphasia is Austerlitz by Sebald.
I love it. I love it so much. Austerlitz, yes.
Yeah, because as you know, then in Austerlitz, the first half of Austerlitz, the reader does not know why he's being told about architecture, why he's being told about fortresses. The first half of the book is a structural representation of Austerlitz's own not knowing what happened to him when he was a child. And so for the longest time, I wanted to try to do something similar in the novel. And I felt that in aphasia, what I was trying to do with Antonio, trying to avoid thinking about the situation that his sister is involved, he was trying to see, how do you represent that? How do you represent that in a way that is compelling, right? So that where you don't talk about the sister, but it is about the sister.
Yes, it's sort of amazing. The sister has had much of her identity erased. And when she discovers her relatives, she feels that they have targeted her, that they have sent satellite rays at her to prevent her from sanity, to invent a post-sanity for her. And it's very moving to the sister, the sister's brother, the sister's mother, to try and find a world in which the sister can rest comfortably. I don't quite know a book like Aphasia. Is the next book, which I assume is well underway, about these characters as well?
Yes. The third book, which I finished recently, is called American Abductions. And in that book, Antonio has been deported. One of his daughters has gone back to Colombia to live with him, and the other one stayed here. And the book is actually, I think, takes some of this notion of impulse sentences to the extreme in a way, where every sentence is a monologue. And in the book, Antonio and his daughters interview a cohort of Latin Americans that have been deported from the United States, and that they are dispersed all over the world.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to KCRW's Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mauro Javier Cárdenas with great excitement about his new novel, Aphasia. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mauro Javier Cárdenas about his new novel, Aphasia, written from inside its protagonist with prose that reads like being alive. Well, that's well said. Thank you. And my friend and collaborator wrote that little description. Now, Mauro, most of the time, publishers tell you you don't have to read the other books, but I felt I had gained so much in understanding Aphasia once I read The Revolutionaries Try Again. Are you doing that rare and beautiful thing, like Javier Marias, of writing a book that will go on part after part to reveal itself?
I think so, and I didn't know I was doing it until I finished the next book, The American Abductions, because I realized that I was writing a trilogy where it's the same family and I am tracking them and in different situations.
The last book I read that literally taught me how to read it as I was reading it was Cortázar's 62, A Model Kit. And I was so excited by the book because it had to teach me how to use its syntax to understand the book. And here, too, in Aphasia, character is being suspended, time is being suspended, but syntax is being reinvented, and it's very exciting.
I think the syntax is incredibly important because when you're not dramatizing in conventional ways, and all you have is this one sentence, right? You have to make sure, and the sentences are very long, right? You have to make sure that there are different elements carrying the reader along. And so musicality is one way to carry the reader along, right? You can create sort of relationships between words, the sound of the words, such that the reader can keep going, even though you shifted time, right? It makes the reader believe you're still kind of in the same time frame, in the same space, because the sounds are very similar.
You were talking about the composer Messiaen, and Messiaen made an entire scale so that he could score the music of Birdsong. This required a different musical syntax. In one of his operas, an opera based on the life of St. Francis of Assisi, the birds all sing together, and our narrator has to escape, leaves the theater. Although the opera is rarely performed, he can't take it all at once. But I feel that what you taught me in this book is that you had to invent a new score, a new syntax that would allow, no matter how infuriating it might sometimes be, that would allow the reader into several different time schemes, space schemes, settings all at once. And it's not easy to do. You had to invent it. You made a new syntax for this novel, Aphasia. The first book is much, much easier, much more direct. But this book really thrilled me because what you were doing was building the household of this entire family and trying to see what could bring them possibly, what in the world could possibly bring them back together.
I think so. And I love that image of Messiah and the forest with, you know, his notebook, notating the Song of Birds. I love that image. But most importantly, I feel that many of the narrative forms that are often used are an obstacle to our relationship to the world because they're founded on sort of outmoded structures. And so it's oftentimes when we talk about so-called experimental writers, you know, we think about, oh, you know, these are folks that come from the lab. They're just kind of playing around. But no, I mean, part of the reason why, you know, that this tradition tries to explore new forms is to get rid of those obstacles, those structures that are mimicking things that are no longer really the way that the world sort of feels to them.
I think my guest, Mauro Javier Cárdenas, joins a group of writers whose goal has been to reimagine the possibilities of narrative. Thank you, Mauro, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I've been talking with Mauro Javier Cárdenas, author of Aphasia, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are taping from our respective residences, so you may hear unusual sounds, but also usual sounds. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. The show is now heard all over the world, twice a week in Berlin. It's quite a privilege for me to speak to a writer, Mauro Javier Cárdenas, who is new to me, and I can't wait for that third book. I hope you'll send me a copy of the manuscript, Mauro. I can't sit still.
Will do.
Special thanks to Bookworm Show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, engineer Paul Smith, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Nicole Krauss is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.